Right before we hit record, you were telling me about hiring, right? And how difficult it's been. Can you talk about that? Like, why is it hard? What are you guys doing? Talk to me. Let's talk about hiring. It's extremely freaking difficult.
It is. And there's kind of a lot of rabbit holes that we can actually jump down this because, one, I guess, kind of give you background. So we started maybe not even 6 months ago. I came on pretty much full time 3 months ago. Now I'm the acting CMO. And in that role as a startup, it's kind of a unique spot, especially in a software startup, because you basically get no resources. Whereas then you go to an established kind of firm or a company, like marketing is very heralded, right? Like the marketing department, whatever it needs, it gets like the last budget that is cut is marketing. And a startup is kind of an inverse, right? Because ultimately you don't want to spend money if people don't like the product. So we're searching for this product market fit that we've finally found, but now there's this weird transition limbo period of like you're the CMO, but also now you got to hire up a team, but you also have to keep the marketing department afloat while you're hiring up a team. And so there's just like all these things going, but at the same time, you can't go too far on the let's hire everybody up because the economics just don't work because you don't know if the product's going to work. And so you're just caught in this weird chicken and egg problem that basically everybody I've been talking to, senior, everybody goes through. It's just kind of the nature of the beast at a startup. But that's kind of that transition for me has been really interesting to understand what operates. So my whole career has essentially been like a high level IC where I'm basically just crushing out stuff, high level strategy, high levels, but not necessarily the same thing as an executive. And what makes a successful executive is so much different. And we're both sports guys. Like mostly when you think of a sports captain, you instantly think of they're like it's prominence, right? It's like the most proficient person on the team is usually the captain. Whereas now that I'm in this kind of executive role, I understand, oh man, like you can have people that don't have like quote unquote high technical proficiencies, but they're incredible leaders. They can hire up and skill up a team really quickly and get moving. And quite frankly, I had a little bit of disdain. I'm not talking about like glorified middle managers. I'm just talking about like true leaders that might not be quote unquote proficient in coding or something like that. And that's the background I came from where, again, that's how I always kind of labeled people's, that's how the hierarchy worked for me. Like, are you technically proficient in X, Y, or Z or in your vertical? And so now I'm finding like there is so much value to these soft skills where I always thought there was a little bit of fluff on some of the executive pay. And now I'm realizing it's really challenging to hire up a team, to skill up a team, to keep everybody operating on the same page, to build the processes, to do all these things. Whereas just being the best player on the team, I think is a lot easier than being the team captain.
Yeah, dude, agreed. All right, so three things. So for context, Rabah is the CMO of Triple Whale. And we're going to talk about Triple Whale a bit later, but just for context, CEO of Triple Whale, incredible business. We'll talk about that in a minute. I kind of want to ask you a few questions about hiring, and then I want to share kind of some of my experience with kind of what we're doing. So with you guys, are you posting job listings on LinkedIn, AngelList, Twitter yourself? You know, are you working with recruiters? Are you doing both? Like, how are you actually approaching, you know, sourcing candidates to interview, and who's doing the interviewing?
Yeah, so great questions and great questions. So first, it's fairly new. We're hiring up the team fairly quickly. And right now it's literally a Notion doc I whipped up with all the details and then my email to send it to us. And so that's something where we need to get probably some more firepower behind it. So I'd love to hear kind of what you guys are doing in your solutions. And the other thing too is we are hiring in Austin only. So we to kind of give you guys some color about Triple Whale. Triple Whale's HQ is in Columbus, Ohio, and that's where the co-founders and the majority of the team works out of. Then all of our dev team is in Jerusalem, and then our AI team is in Moscow. So we want to build out hubs around certain proficiencies, and so Austin kind of just made a lot of sense to build. I'm here, and then also alignment of it's a really awesome city, especially in that kind of marketing fun creative style. So we're building out the hub here. So that does restrict a little bit because I another kind of tangent. You said it was okay for tangent. So
Yeah, do
I
it.
was a huge work from home guy. Like I was always a very big proponent of work from home. And now that I've been doing it for about 4 years, so I used to work at Whole Foods and then I moved to an agency that was out of New York. So I basically worked from home there. And then I had my own agency that I basically worked from home. And there's certain things like my personality, I have a hard time turning off sometimes. And so I don't have any forcing functions when I work at home. Like outside of my fiance, like telling me she loves me and interrupting me all the time, which I love, but it's just the nature of the beast because she runs her own little vintage shop out of the house. And so I'm excited. We just got a new office right downtown Austin in a really cool spot. And so I'm actually excited to get back into, anyways, to land the plane. One of the things is we want to build a team in Austin for that very reason, to have some kind of shoulder to shoulder brushings of kind of just that idea sex of, you know, you just have just these random thoughts like, oh man, it's just so much easier to capture that. And I don't necessarily even know if it's possible, even on video. Like I think there's just something to being in the same room. And obviously if the economics don't work, and there's definitely ways to run distributed teams. This is just, you know, I get to choose since I'm the CMO. And so this is just our preference to have everybody in Austin. So the too long didn't read there is it makes it even more challenging because we can only grab from that talent set. And the other thing is we're hiring a mid to senior role where most of these people have jobs. Like they're not looking for employment. And so it's like this gets into, you know, some different roles where it's not necessarily a non-consumption market. It's like these people are already fulfilled. And so how do you move them? And then not only that, we want to hire now. And those people usually, you know, you're going to give 2 weeks to 30 days notice sometimes. And then there's just a lot of moving parts that I have not had to really brush against yet. So it's kind of all the inner machinations of building the department.
Yeah, let's break this down. So let's start kind of the most recent piece you mentioned. You mentioned like the folks that are mid to senior, right? That they're doing other things. Like where are the good people at? Like, are they moving from corporate or agencies to freelance? Are they starting their own agencies? Do these folks run brands? Like from everything that you're seeing, like where are these folks? What are they doing? And why don't they want to leave what they're doing?
The highest talent people I've seen are people that have moved to their mini agencies where they might be running like 3 to 5 clients, but each client's paying them, you know, $5,000. And then they have basically no overhead. So they're just printing money. And then two, it is a diversified income stream. And so quite frankly, like business income is way better just in terms of tax treatment than W-2 income. And so without, you know, unless you need access to like financial instruments, like loans, mortgages, such like that, W-2 income's trash, man. And so you get into these people that know what they're doing. They're really happy what they're doing. And that's the reason they left, and they're running a smaller show. They have a lot more impact, quote unquote. And so those have been the highest talent people that we've thrown some, you know, decent numbers at them in terms of comp and all that stuff. And they're like, no, thank you. But we're just kind of happy with what we're doing. And then the other people are just kind of entrepreneurs that don't want to give up the bet they're already making, that they're super talented, which I totally understand. So those are kind of the two rejection types that I've encountered that I would wanted, if that makes sense, where it was just, there was not much really we could do. It was just kind of selling to people that aren't buying.
Yeah. What do you think the future looks like? Do you think it's having to find more junior level folks and just spend more time training and investing in them? Is that option? Or is it the other option, like making like an acqui-hire of an agency or a freelance group? Like, what do you think is going to happen in the future when I think more of this is happening, right? Like I think MarketerWire put out a study that like so many people are starting freelance shops and agencies right now. It's so easy and people want to work for themselves
and you make more money.
One or two clients and you're normally working at an agency or an e-commerce business, you're making just as much, if not more, and you control your schedule. So what do you think happens in the future? Do you have to start from the ground up and find junior folks and intern level people and just train them and give them the keys to the kingdom? Do you do, you know, aqua hires?
I think those are fantastic questions. And for me, I think it is both of those pathways. And so like Triple Whale in specific, it's more so where we're at on the business journey, because usually acqui-hire won't come until, you know, the balance sheet's a little more robust. There's kind of a war chest of like, hey, because essentially acqui-hire, to your point, is those could pretty much be considered recruiting costs. Like that's ultimately what you're doing. You're just recruiting this top CEO, CFO, CTO, whatever, maybe the whole exec team, maybe they have some killer engineers, what have you. And that's just way easier to buy their company than it is to go find these people, interview them, qualify them, get the CEO in the room with them, see if he likes them, or CTO, what have you. So I think the acqui-hire route's a really smart route. The challenge there again is you bump into the entrepreneurial spirit, which sometimes can't be overwhelmed by the capitalistic incentives. The other thing I think is junior skill ups is very appealing to me right now. because I could get a few people at the same time, so I could kind of spread my bets out. The problem is, and so there's always a but, right? Like, managing people is fucking hard and it's really time consuming.
Yep.
And so the more direct reports you get, and not to sound condescending, but the lower those direct report, lower level people, those direct reports are, they're very like, go for a yes, yes, ma'am, yes, sir. Like, yep. They're construction workers. Like, you tell them what to do and they do it. Whereas when you get into the higher level, they're more like architects, where it's like, you can just kind of brain dump on them and they're like, okay, I'll figure it out. Like, and so that's a big bifurcation. And so that's one of the challenges. But I think to your point, you know, maybe that's the bet, and you can build some processes and make it a little bit formulaic, where you almost build this kind of incubator of talent, which I think every company should be. So yeah, I mean, I think those are definitely two really viable options. There's just a lot of cost. Both of them are super expensive. And the first doesn't net out in terms of short-term gains. Like, there's going to be long-term gains there, but there's going to be short-term pain. And so that's kind of the calculation I'm doing, is like, what's a tolerable threshold for the short-term amount of loss of productivity? Because it's going to happen. But is it going to pay off to have that long-term win in the future? Which it will, because right now, you know, there are certain systems that aren't scalable and they need to be rebuilt around processes so they can scale.
Yeah, it makes sense. All right, one more question on hiring, and I'll share a few things kind of on our end, and then we'll move on to the next section. So you mentioned kind of Notion, right? So you're building out like the job descriptions in Notion. What happens from there? Are you personally messaging it to people you think would be a good fit? Are you posting that on Twitter and running spend behind it? Like, what happens after you create the job description? How do you actually find the candidates?
Yeah. So ultimately right now, it's been the OG posting in all the kind of job forums, I know all the Slack groups I'm a part of, and kind of that first wave of seeing what we can move the needle. We'll probably end up putting some spend behind it. And, you know, worst case scenario, it might not be something where there, the couple positions that we're looking to hire, head of content, head of growth, holler at me, are kind of high enough level that would warrant a recruiter. So that's something that we're probably not opposed to as well. So, but in terms of other things, I mean, LinkedIn again is something that I haven't tried. I don't know why I'm such a LinkedIn Luddite. I don't know why I'm just so like, I don't know. It just feels so faux pas, doesn't it? But it's so good. Like, I see Chris Mead over at CrossNet crushes it on there. You do a decent job on that. It's decent. I don't know why I shit on it so much. I don't know why.
You spend
it's
too like, much time on Twitter. Everyone on Twitter is a LinkedIn hater.
I know. It's actually like not a horrible, I don't know. Maybe I'm going to get shit for it, but it's not a horrible network. I think there's a lot of, if I'm going to be honest, I think it's one of the, like, if there's any arbitrage to be had, it's probably that, right? That or TikTok. Like, you can win on, anybody can kind of win on TikTok. And right now, I mean, there's a few LinkedIn incumbents, but it's not like Instagram or Facebook, or Facebook in specific, and Instagram really too. Like, you're not breaking into those explore feeds very easily. Like, it's going to be a big challenge.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's interesting. So on our end, so my little brother, Carson, who I think you may or may not know, he was doing like some freelance recruiting for us, and he was helping us find, you know, candidates for like a marketing role and a design role and a copywriting role, but he was still in college. So we wanted to hire him full time to work for us, because we were scaling to that point where we needed someone in full time. And we used Carson then to find a recruiter. So it's kind of like this meta thing of using a recruiter to find a recruiter. And we brought in this girl who's just been fantastic. She's also taken on things like, you know, HR and whatnot. And, you know, as we're scaling, there's like all of these laws and these regulations that you need and all this healthcare stuff. So it's been a lot. We had to transition to like platform for like payroll. And we kind of like put our, you know, big boy and big girl pants on this year. Yeah. We kind of grew up, and I don't want to say corporatized, because I don't really like that, but really kind of like official type of thing. And we've since, like, since she started 6 or 8 months ago, we've made like 30 or 40 hires. So like, literally having someone that's like obsessed and dedicated to like a full-time HR recruiting role has been huge. And she now has, I think, 2 or 3 other folks on her team that are like junior, mid-level kind of recruiting admin type folks. And that for us has been a game changer, like bringing someone in to just literally handle, you know, back office things and scout, kind of going through the internet, posting JDs. And we have so many job descriptions up, and we were hitting LinkedIn, and I was posting on social and hit my newsletter so much that I ended up using like a personal job board. There's this company called Palette that has like the ability for folks to use job boards. So I've got one, and Nick Sharma's got one, and there's a couple other folks in the space that have one.
I need to jump on
almost
those.
Like, I made a job board for my community. And we keep filling now jobs from it. And I get Nick Shackelford to post and this, that, and the other. So it's been kind of interesting. So I think like the learnings for us there was, as it makes sense, like bringing in someone to handle and manage it full time is really important, because you as a CMO of the company, you've got so many other things that you need to be doing. Like doing the HR and the recruiting is a full-time job in and of itself. So you go from doing like 40 to 60 hours at least of the CMO type stuff. Now you have to put another 10, 30 hours in on the HR stuff. And then week after week, you're burnt out, right? So those are kind of like some of the things for us. And obviously, I think having a personal brand, right? Like me and Nick are fortunate to have that.
Sure.
You know, you guys and the guys at Triple Whale, like some of your guys' growth has been like some of the most insane growth I've ever seen, like in SaaS and Shopify, like in general. I want to talk about that in 1 second. So I think for you guys, like people know about you guys. Like it's crazy how, you know, viral and how often you guys are being mentioned, you know, on Twitter, which I guess, unless you have any questions, I want to kind of move to that section of like growth. Like how the heck are you guys doing what you're doing?
Yeah. Yeah. I guess just to land the plane, I'm totally with you. And so we actually just brought on a head of HR. So that's something I need to lean into. And then I didn't even think about the kind of exclusive job boards as well. Again, that's a really good idea. What else can I say? No, I mean, that's kind of the path. There's just been more stuff to do than hands to do it. But I love where your head's at. That's exactly the way to go. And there's a certain aspect, and I'll stop babbling, but again, another kind of naivete that I had at the IC level was just like hiring's easy. It's so hard. It's so time consuming. Now I understand why there's like actual proper recruitment departments at these corporations and these big businesses, because it is just a headache. And quite frankly, it's a huge value add or value loss to the company. Like if you bring in shitty people, dude, it can ruin good teams and vice versa. And so, yeah, I'm totally with you on that.
Sick. All right, let's talk about Triple Whale. I really quickly, like in a 30-second overview, I want you to explain what it is. And then I want to kind of talk about like, how did you land there? Like, how did you personally land there? Like, were you a user of the platform? Did you just see it on Twitter and you're like, man, this is sick. I've noticed X, Y, and Z that they can improve. Like, how did it happen? What is Triple Whale and how did you end up there?
Yeah. So I'll address the first question. So Triple Whale is the operating system for e-commerce. So ultimately what we're doing is we're aggregating all of your data sources. We're blending that data. We're doing some sophisticated analysis on top of that data. So you can see cohorting, you can see LTVs. And then on top of that, we've built an attribution tool. So there's Triple Whale and then there's Triple Whale with attribution. And that attribution is, fueled by our Triple Pixel. And so that's our first party pixel. And so ultimately it's one login, one dashboard, all the metrics, and then it's also on mobile. So it's basically freeing people from all these really bad ad managers. And then also doing a bunch of blended data, which kind of sucks to do. If you ever play around in Data Studio and stuff, it can become a headache.
Sick. Yeah. You guys have built something really special. Our paid team, you know, loves you guys and uses you guys religiously. Yep. So really, really cool stuff there. How did your journey, you know, kind of cross paths with those guys?
Yeah. So, just to give you a little color, I went to school for economics. I wanted to be an investment banker at one point in time. And then I got really into technology while I was at university. I went to Indiana University, Hoosiers. And while I was there, I got really into tech. So I started building websites. I started coding iPhone apps. I started AWS stuff, just as nerdy as you got. And then I wanted to start making money. And I realized that building somebody's cash register isn't as valuable as putting money in their cash register. And so I could ask for way more money when I was making people money versus building a website is, you know, inherently a value add, but not like explicitly because you still need customers, you still need all this stuff. Anyways, so then I got into marketing and I started just doing, I was into photography at the time. And so doing eBooks with a friend that was really big on Instagram and yoga. So we crushed it there. And that's kind of how I cut my teeth into ads.
Interesting.
Then I started doing luxury real estate. So I was doing all the paid media for a luxury real estate firm here in Austin. And then I moved to Whole Foods. So doing all the paid media in the recruitment vertical there. And then I went to an agency where I spent boatloads of money and we would kind of laugh about it. No offense, but we'd call it LA math, where there was just some really, when growth at all costs is the kind of directive, you can see some It's a very unique economics, put it that way. But got to spend a ton of money, learned a ton about mobile app installs. That was primarily the kind of clients we were working with. Got to work with a bunch of really big clients, spent a bunch of money, and then went off and did my own agency. And that's kind of where the Triple Whale kind of engagement started. Seeing him on Twitter, AJ and I would kind of banter back and forth. I saw kind of the product velocity and how they're launching and all this cool stuff. And I came from a Google Data Studio, kind of super metrics. I roll my own, again, kind of super nerdy stuff. And I was showing AJ kind of what I was running. He's like, hey, I can beat that. And then we kind of just started going back and forth with it. And then ultimately they offered me opportunity to be part of the first round. So it was actually my first private investment. So that was really cool. And then from that, it kind of just went into a pretty much honeymoon phase to explore like what this would look like. And then in October, we kind of hit the guns ablazing. And then it's kind of been all downhill since, as they say, just swimming around and in chaos, making money, launching amazing features. And the community that we're building has been like just some of the, I would put like a triple whale, like either a whale mailer or a triple whaler up against anybody. I mean, they're just the sweetest, smartest, like most empathetic, understanding, awesome people. It's been cool to see what kind of the product has attracted, because a lot of them are like hardcore capitalists like me, right? And so it's nice to see like there's some humanity behind it. So it's been really cool. And AJ and Max have been really awesome in terms of giving me a lot of leeway in terms of what we're doing with our brand identity, where we're kind of this like, the way I try and position this, it's almost this like college professor with the shoulder patches, but also smokes weeds, not condescending, like really knowledgeable, but at the same time, kind of a kale and cigarettes, where it's like, don't take yourself too serious, man. Life is too short. Like none of this shit really matters anyways. Like it's, you know, all kind of what we need. And so having all that has really manifested into like, a really fun, approachable, but yet value add brand, where, you know, like when you're getting whale mail, you're going to get a really well thought out editorial, and it's not going to be like all jokes, but at the same time, I might slip some poison references in there or some memes and stuff. And so, I don't know. I just think that humor has been lost in academia and in education a lot. And I think that humor is one of the fastest ways people learn, because what happens with humor is you let people take their guard down. They're not going to be judged. It's not going to be, you don't know what Mer is, Chase, or you don't know what Poaz is. Like, who learns like that? Nobody learns like that. But if you can crack a joke, or it just makes things, I think Ronald Reagan, good old Ronnie Reagan's, politics aside, he was one of the most brilliant orators, and he actually had little cards with jokes on them. And that's how he would always kind of like break the ice, because he just understood the power of humor. And so I think there's a lot lost in that in education. And so that's kind of where Triple Whale has been really fun to see, because it's ultimately an education content play in terms of marketing. And so it's been really fun to have that buy-in from the leaders there, and being able to kind of morph into something that's, I think, really fun and approachable, almost like the Mr. Rogers of marketing.
Dude, I love it. So to kind of quickly recap your own personal journey with Triple Whale, and then I want to talk about growth. It sounds like you kind of were either a super user slash kind of someone that was just giving feedback and kind of poking holes at things and kind of showing what you're doing, kind of comparing notes. Sounds like you first actually became an angel investor in the company, and then you actually became, you know, a co-founding member or a, you know, an executive, an employee, whatever the right word is, and kind of ever since have been building the rocket ship with the guys. That's awesome. Let's talk about the rocket ship that you guys have been building. Is the growth, is it organic? Is it a mix of organic and paid? Like, how are you guys doing what you're doing? Like, you know, how are you getting people to share on Twitter and post screenshots? Is that something you're prompting, or literally the community is taking everything that you guys have done and just running with it and growing the business for you?
Yeah. So I would say if it was percentage split, probably 80% organic, maybe 10% influence or kind of partnership, and then 10% paid. And the paid is ultimately just defensive Google ad buys, where it's just kind of keeping people off of our kind of branded keywords. So like it is paid per se, but it's not in. Anyways, super low levels there. So yeah, I mean, ultimately what I told AJ, I think the big thesis is just community content and education. And like, if we can make people better skilled up and people make more money from the content, and then if they adopt the platform or they see how easy it is to make more money for themselves. Like it's always been around value add for the community and value generation. And quite frankly, like it's hard to understand, but like exponentials and compounding is like not very intuitive, but like that's exactly what content is. And so like there was, you know, a month or so of just like me screaming into a black hole, but you got to bite down on the mouthpiece. You got to send the newsletters out. You got to post the podcast. You got to do all this stuff. And then finally something clicks, and then finally something takes hold, and then another thing takes hold, and then another thing takes hold. And so it's just been for me making sure everything we're doing is aligned in terms of education, value generation, and also how can we give people other stories and deliverables that they can then show off. So I think we did a good job with our triple pixel launch, where we made a really cool floppy disk, kind of almost NFT looking style stuff. And so being able to give people better on-ramps to the community, that's a big 2022 initiative for us. We're starting the Whale Sanctuary, where it'll be our community of all the triple whalers. And so, but in terms of, I mean, honestly, outside of the processes and stuff, like we got lucky. We hit a really good niche. We had a really bunch of like awesome partners like you. We partnered with some other big people, Shaq, Jason, a lot of really hitters in the space, but not partnered in the way of like mercenary, but partnered in the way like value for value. And you guys had communities, and then we had a community that we wanted to build that would also align with the community you already have. And so there was a lot of symbiotic relationships that weren't built off of strict economics. And I think that, again, is hard to do if you don't have either the money or that, you know, like everybody wants to hire Oprah, of course. But at the same time, is that the long-term goal of the company? No. Like, would cash on Oprah be great for a short-term bump? Sure. But then we get a bunch of Grouponers where it's, we wanted to have this radial growth where if we can really delight that 20 to 30% of people, the next 20% will come. The next 20% will come. But we didn't want to get caught. I think there's a lot of when you serve everyone, you serve no one kind of stuff. And I think there's some wisdom to that, where we have a very defined niche right now, where if you want to be the best marketer, you should read our stuff. And then if you want to be the most proficient marketer in terms of deploying your paid media, one of the easiest ways to cut down on all that mental cognitive load is to use Triple Whale. And so that's kind of the thesis in a nutshell.
Sweet. And then what about like the invite only, right? So I think the app still requires an invite code. Can we talk about like, I guess the psychology behind that, the pros and the cons behind that? Like, has that been a big growth lever? Let's talk about like wait lists, invite only. Was that intentional? Was that kind of a growth hack that was unintentional? Can you share any learnings on kind of that piece?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So we are currently waitlist only, but we will be changing that shortly. That's a function of two things. One, to your point, like you want to get inside the club that has, so like this is actually a club. I mean, like literal club, dance club. Like you would do that and you'd see this huge line outside, and then you finally get in, there's nobody in the club, and you're like, what the hell? And it's kind of the same cognitive trick there. But it's also to make sure that people are, so trust is our number one thing. We want to make sure that people trust our data and trust the platform. And so there's a certain aspect of just scaling so fast, especially as we bring, and we have some larger stores in kind of like $70 million to $100 million run rates, where you start to hit up into some kind of edge cases where you're just pulling a lot of data, especially in terms of our attribution tool of Triple Pixel. And so it was a function of two things. One, definitely for promotion, but two, there was a certain aspect of, we wanted to control the supply to ensure that the quality was ubiquitous and amazing and over serving everyone, versus kind of just throwing out a clunky thing that breaks all the time.
Right on. Makes sense. A couple of last questions I have and things I want to talk about is like, either through the data that you kind of have access to, or maybe just through, you know, working with clients or stuff on Twitter, any big trends or learnings that you could see either through the data that happened kind of recently in Q4 that are going to be kind of indicating towards Q1? Like, do you have any thoughts in your mind of like what you're seeing, pros or cons, things that people should be doing more of, paying attention to? I guess just some best practices or tips based off of historical things or kind of things that are coming on the growth side, on the supply chain side, any way you want to take it.
Yeah. So I think the biggest macro thing that I've seen, and it's not necessarily kind of like a statistical trend, it's more so like a meme, is that people are starting to get hip to profit. And so people are really starting to understand like not every dollar is created equal. especially when you're using paid media to promote said product. So I've seen a really big uptick on people learning about POAS, people understanding gross profit, and honestly, even looking at like net profit per order, which is pretty granular stuff. So that has been kind of something that has been really interesting to me, because I've been in media buying for a really long time, and I can't think of profit being mentioned once until this last maybe year to 6 months, where now it's kind of starting to proliferate and people are really starting to get hip to like, it's not really about revenue watching, but ultimately like cash flow is king, but kind of net profit cash flow or free cash flow is really king. And so that has been really interesting. I saw mixed data, but for the most part, starting your Black Friday was actually a good thing, but your Black Friday, so on the net, it was more volume, but your Black Friday was smaller than previous, if that makes sense, which would net out. So you say you start your sale on Monday versus Wednesday. Like last year was Wednesdays and this year was Monday. On the net, if you take Monday to Sunday as your Black Friday, Cyber Monday week, or I guess including Monday, excuse me. So take Monday to Monday. That was bigger if you started earlier, but your Black Friday proper comparison year over year was smaller. If that makes sense. So the net was better if you started bigger, but your Black Friday was smaller. What was another interesting stuff we saw?
So I know you guys have some Klaviyo analytics, and I think you guys are now supporting SMS. Any interesting stats on retention? Obviously, I think SMS adoption has been through the roof. I don't know if you have anything interesting points there, anything on the email side that you're seeing.
There is some stuff that I was doing. So we have a really fancy, and not to turn this into a product pitch, but a fancy cohorting tool. And what you can do is roll up those cohorts by LTV cumulative, and then you can actually look by discount code. And so a few things that I saw. One, getting people on your email list obviously matters, and I can actually quantify, or for all the stores I sit across, I can actually quantify and show you how much it matters. So that's a huge, huge thing. So hire Chase or hire somebody like Chase. It's a huge, huge deal. But that's not really like a huge revelation. It's more of a verified thesis. But the second thing was there was cohorts for a few clients where they were actually terrible cohorts, but then Black Friday hit. So these were Black Friday, Cyber Monday from last year. And then Black Friday hit and they all paid up. And so it's not that they were necessarily horrible clients. They actually netted out decent value, but it's about a 10, 11 month payback period. So you could, you know, maybe that is necessarily not a great client because that's a really long time to wait. And they're buying again at a discount, even though that's calculated into the LTV. But it still was interesting to me to see that those kind of people, I guess, just sit to shop. But that was fascinating as well. So
yeah, on that note, who are those people? Like we see the exact same thing with our customers too. And we specifically target them around the same period of time because they do buy again. But like, I've never asked myself, and I've never looked like, who in the world are these people? Like, why do they not engage, or why do they not buy? Are they doing this on every brand that they're a part of? Like, is that the only time they shop of the whole year? Like, who are these people?
I don't know. They're like the never nudes from Arrested Development. I don't know. I guess they exist, but I haven't yet built a thesis around that. That's the only thing I can think of is, essentially people that buy like the winter coat on sale in the summer to wait like 6 months to wear it. Like, I don't know. I mean, and again, that's why I'm not super bearish or bullish on Black Friday, Cyber Monday ads in general. Like, depending on the economics, usually I'll just overspend up until Black Friday and then just float the rest of the month, because I think the Groupon effect, there's definitely some value to Black Friday, Cyber Monday, not denigrating that. I was a bit more of a kind of Luddite in that sense, where I thought this year was going to be horrible, and it absolutely wasn't. It was totally fine. So there's definitely something there. I think when I think of Black Friday, Cyber Monday, not to take a soapbox here, but there's just, I think, two things you need to make sure. It's a money grab. So with that money grab, make it as efficient as possible. Don't be handing out ads to people that are already going to buy. And then the second thing is you're going to pull a lot of sales forward from December. And so what you need to do is try and concentrate on like higher LTV products or like subscriptions or stuff like that, where you can then internalize that LTV in that customer. Cause if not, you're going to get that one purchase and then you paid all that money for them to purchase, but they're never going to engage with your brand again. So that's kind of my little Black Friday, Cyber Monday spiel. Sorry.
Yeah, dude, no, this is great. This is fire. I think that's a good place to wrap. Where can people find you personally? I'm guessing probably you on Twitter. And then where can people find Triple Whale on social and then Triple Whale's website? What are the three places for those? You, Triple Whale, social, Triple Whale website.
Love it. So me, I'm at Rob Arahil, RabArahil on the Bird app. And then if you want to get involved in Triple Whale, you can go to trytriplewhale.com, join the wait list there. And then we also have an amazing newsletter called Whale Mail that was referenced earlier. You can sign up on our Twitter page. It's at Try Triple Whale. And right there, smash the subscribe button right on the Twitter page. And off you go. You'll be into the Twitter universe or the Triple Whale universe.
Sweet, man. This was killer. I appreciate you.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Chase.